to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thanks for listening. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Mark Edwards.
Be here on a nice spring morning.
And I'm glad you can be, since our main story is inspired by the recent flooding along the Missouri in eastern Iowa. And I understand that you have been collecting histories of flooding in Iowa for decades.
I have quite a file system. And I'm also here to talk about the Friends of Ledges, organization Friends made a film called The Ledges, and it's going to be premiering at the Boone Theater on April 13th, 14th, and 15th.
But before we get to the serious part of the show, I'd like to introduce a new radio group. I read about them in the Nevada Journal. The Nevada Boys and Girls Club has started creating news programs for the Facebook page of the Boys and Girls Club of Story County. Right away, I thought they should have a chance to really be on the radio. So I call their coordinators, who are both named Shelby. So Shelby 1 and Shelby 2 brought the radio club over to the KHOI studio last Monday. We recorded everybody's station IDs, so you may hear them at random hours on KHOI. We also recorded a short news story about their radio club. The voices you are about to hear are 5th through 8th graders from the Nevada Boys and Girls Club.
How we got started is that the Shelbys wanted us to do a news program, and I started as the weatherman, and now that we came up with our own commercials, and I'm current events too. Now, Lizzie, do you want answer some questions?
Sure.
What kind of news do you cover?
First thing I did was, since I have a job in horse training, I talked about that in the saddle of the horse, and it is kind of dangerous because if the horse decides to roll over, your foot could get stuck in the stirrup.
Lucas, do you have any news stories you'd like to tell us about?
We're making an episode 2, and it's coming out in a bit, I think. And so, yeah, and it's going to be fun. There's some, like, I did some current events in there, and it's turned out pretty well. The editors are editing it right now.
What are the current events that you've talked about?
The flooding and Trump's administration with South Korea and the top happy states, the Des Moines sub-tax, and that's all that I can remember so far.
And what were the top happy states? Iowa?
No, Wyoming, Hawaii, South Dakota, North Dakota, yeah, Nebraska. Yeah, that's all that I can remember. Any more questions?
Whose idea was it to start a radio station?
Actually, I think it was Shelby's idea. A newscast. It was basically everybody's idea. Like, okay, so it started like one day we were just watching a movie. Then we out of nowhere, Shelby came up with these ideas to do something. We started off as like just gonna play Mario Kart and do all this Just Dance, and then she answered, and then she asked, "Oh, or do you want to do a newscast?" That at first everybody was scared to do it because like we were like, "Oh, we don't know what we're gonna do. We're probably gonna mess up." But then like when we started thinking about it, that same day, like 20 minutes later, we were like, "Oh, let's do it. This sounds like a great idea." So, like, yeah, that's how it all came about. And, like, then, like, we all thought of it as a deep thought, emailed a couple people here, emailed a couple people there. I mean, yeah, like, yeah, it's really fun. Like, you get to work with partners. I mean, you get to interact with people. You get to, like, hang out. Like, and also, like, you get to know more people through what your topic is. So, like, that's how it all came about and how, like, yeah, we've been putting, like, a lot of thought into it, a lot of effort. And I also got to give prop to Shelby and Shelby. I mean, they're the ones who basically started the thing and helped, like, gave us the motivation to move forward.
Thank you. Now, I'll have to ask you a different question. Now, do you do news stories, or what do you specialize in?
I do, like, random stuff, like the picture in the newspaper was me basically showing a design I did in this creative design, clothes designing thing book in the Boys and Girls Club area of the church. It was kind of funny because one of my friends was at Pittsburgh Steelers, so there's this boot design I decided to try of a Pittsburgh Steelers thing.
So you have art as well as news and interviews.
Like, one thing I also want to start, and I've taken this, like, for a train of thought, haven't I really asked Shelby, like, as my newscast topic, like, I wanted to start, like, what's going down on the streets. I mean, it sounds pretty weird, but, like, I just want to do what, like, everyday people are doing. Like, I just want to take shout-outs to, like police officers, lawyers, people who work at places, or people who don't really, like, make that much money, or, like in Des Moines, like, I would like to travel to Des Moines to see a couple of people, like, see if, like, go to the homeless, probably, like, do, like, a food for homeless thing. Like, that's basically my train of thought, is, like, yeah. So, like, that, I haven't really asked them yet, haven't really put that in a train of thought, but, like, I just hope, like, that can be, like, our main topic, and that we can have, like, we can take that forward, and that they can have, like, we can basically do that, because, like, that would really make me happy and most of my family members, because I'm giving back. I'm giving back to the people who don't really have much. I'm lucky to have clothes on my I'm lucky to have clothes, food on the table, a roof over my head, a mom. I'm lucky to have all these things. But, like, it hurts me to hear that, like, some people, like, are, like, don't have these things, and, like, and it really hurts me when all these people are going to jail, all these people are getting killed, doing suicide. Like, that hurts me to the core. It's like, I just want to give back. And,
well, that's a very inspiring statement. Is there anyone else who'd like to talk about what is important to them? Kaylin, so yes. What do you want to tell us about?
Tell you about Boys and Girls Club.
Yes, or and our your program.
Yeah, and I also want to tell you guys about my thing I'm doing for the news.
Yes.
And I'm doing a Disney-themed. And I'm talking about the new movie, The Lion King 2019.
Do you think it's a good movie?
Yes. I watched it since I was little.
And so why is it Lion King 2019? What's different about it?
Basically, 2019, they have realistic instead of cartoony.
So real lions.
Yes.
Wow.
But animated, kind of.
So, and that's going to be a news story on your radio program. Great. Okay, Kimberly, what are you working on?
So, I want to talk about the open house that we're going to have on the 11th, 4 to 6, and then people can come and see what we're doing, and there's going to be food and everything. So,
at the Boys and Girls Club in Nevada. Do you know where that is? Can you give people the address?
Central Presbyterian Church in Nevada.
So, Central Presbyterian Church in Nevada is where you meet. Every week? Mm-hmm. Every and that's day. Where the open house will be.
Yeah, on the 11th.
Thank you to the radio group of the Nevada Boys and Girls Club for coming in and telling us how you got your project started and how you do it and a little bit about the Boys and Girls Club. As you may have noticed, weather and flooding were significant parts of their programs. Those topics will be the major themes for us this morning as well. For those who have just tuned in, I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen. My co-host, Mark Edwards, will be bringing us insights from his lifelong interest in flooding.
You know, when you said you wanted to talk about flooding, I went and I have extensive file systems on flooding that I've been saving. I found some of them go all the way back to 1954. And so as I looked at those together, they kind of always want to set one thing off against another when it comes to the flooding. So we're always having discussions about the Corps of Engineers and how they could have controlled or made that flooding less or something, and who's going to adjust and address this problem. So we always come back to the endangered species part on the Missouri, because that's been a big part of the Missouri River. And the Missouri River is really unique in some regards because it's had a lot of alterations. And to give you an example, say, of that, the three large dams north of Iowa on that Missouri River have enough water. They hold enough water to cover the state here of Florida up to a depth of 2 feet in water if they let their water out. So that's amazing to me how much water we're talking there. So in this event, it's very particular or different from the other events because the farmers want to blame that the Corps is letting out water to address these endangered species. But actually, we had a real bomb cyclone event, which is a very unique rain event of extreme amounts of rain in a short period of time. And most of that landed below the dams on the Missouri River. So there was, in some ways, not the opportunity normally that the Corps would have to be able to address that letting out how much water in and out of that dam. And so that added another feature to all this. And I think it's beginning to get a lot of press now because it affected not only the farmers getting into their fields and planting and all that silt deposit, but this is the first time in the long time, that farmers have stored grain. And they stored their grain because they wanted to, wait till the prices went up because the prices have really dropped. And so they've really put a lot in storage this year that hasn't happened for many, many, many years. And a lot of that storage got wet. And so now there's no insurance to really cover that. There's no way they can the government can step in, the Department of Ag. And so now they're trying to figure out, well, what do we do about that? Because it's really going to affect things. So it's kind of a really unique situation this time. And I think, again, like say when you place these floods in some kind of historical context, the other dimension to controlling that water by the Corps is barge traffic. And we've done a lot of alterations to that poor river, straightened it, rip-wrapped it, and changed it so that it doesn't go into a floodplains like it has for historical times. And so I found some statistics here that says the U.S. Department of Ag says barges carry 1/3 of 1% of the grain harvested in Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, and Missouri. And it costs more to actually maintain that levees and all that than it saves those shippers. And so I read an interesting quote in the Des Moines Register. It's like building a 25-lane interstate for 735 miles that nobody uses. So it would be a lot less expensive to buy this land for wildlife and for flooding than to rebuild the levees. And I think that's where the discussion is coming in. We're trying to say which interests have the most priority here at this point. And we have a lot of sympathy for the individual people who've lost their livelihoods and won't probably be able to get back in and farm on that land yet this spring.
We have a guest who actually experienced being flooded out with this flood. Is John Davis with us?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning, John.
Morning, John.
So you, I understood from the Aladdin, our engineer who made the call, that you had a little problem even getting up this morning because of, well, I suppose it's the weather. Was it your electricity went out?
Yes, a major transformer broke 10:30 last night, and we didn't get power back until about 4 this morning.
So where are you right now?
I'm in Hamburg, Iowa. It's in Fremont County in the southwest corner of Iowa.
And are you in the house that was flooded out and that you're going to have to abandon?
Yes, I'm in the house.
And you, I guess that... You did get flood insurance for that, is that right?
Yes, I got flood insurance. Unfortunately, the damage to the basement and the wiring of the house is so bad, it won't cover the cost of replacement, so I'm going to have to abandon the house and move elsewhere to Council Bluffs.
Wow.
Well, this is particularly ironic for you. Were you actually in Hamburg when the flood came, or were you?
Yes.
You'd returned from the Philippines.
Yes, I spent 5 months in the Philippines. I'm a climate analyst, and I was working with the Philippine government. Returned on March 7th to my home here, only to have less than a week later a nice sunny warm day with rain and a biblical-sized flood. So I was here from the very beginning.
Okay.
Well, we're a little curious on the bomb cyclone. I'm not sure which terminology they're using, but they were trying to say that it was somewhat of an unusual rain event that precipitated this event.
Yes, it is. Fact is, I followed it on satellite from the Philippines, and this started back in February. And in the first 4 days of February, if you can imagine the Arctic Circle with a ring going around it called the jet streams, the first 4 days in February, and usually high temperatures, a couple of days were in the 70s, and the rest of the time it was in the 40s and 50s. It's supposed to be minus 24, minus 14. And what happened, this huge amount of hot weather cut the jet stream and literally took the entire Arctic region, except for the ice caps, it took the entire Arctic region and had it slide across the globe, across Canada, into the Midwest.
Well, we knew that from the polar vortex. We kept hearing about the polar vortex.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. It was the largest polar vortex in history.
Wow. These new terms are just say something about something's changing here when we have to come up with these new terms to explain it. So with your background, could you give a little bit more about that? You're a climate activist. So give us a little bit more background in that. That sounds fascinating.
Okay. Yes. I'm a retired government employee. I was in the Clinton administration. I was a special assistant to Al Gore in the White House. And as you know, Al Gore, besides the internet, was very, very interested even then in the environment. And so when I retired, I continued on with climate as a kind of hobby and became a full-time occupation for me. And so since the early 90s, I've been working on climate almost every day. I was knighted by the King of Spain in 1998 for my work in global warming. I've been across the world talking and lecturing, attending meetings on climate and climate change, and helping where I can. I do a lot of writing, and so I follow quite a bit on Facebook and on blogs.
Well, boy, it's sure getting more and more attention all the time, the discussion. I just saw that was it Al Gore's daughter won their law case or was dismissed for trying to bring the climate up to the public awareness. And so I'm kind of curious how you relate to all that, you know, where we're still discussing whether it's true or not. That's a hard question, I know, John, but I bet you've had to face it before.
Yes, I've had that question many, many times, and all I can say is look outside.
Yes.
Here's what's happened so far just in 2019. We've had disaster number one is what I call the St. Patrick's Day flood. Right after that, there was Cyclone Idea in Mozambique, which killed thousands of people. Right after that, there were two Category 5 massive storms that hit Queensland and Australia. And now we have a northeaster problem in the United States. Our weather has become extremely erratic. because of climate change and what we're putting into the air. And this is causing instability across the world. It's felt most right now in the equatorial areas of the United States. My friends in the Philippines sent me photographs, and they have 100 million people on a small series of islands. They can barely feed themselves in a good year. This year, their rice crops, their farmland is cracked and parched and just cracked open because no rain. Same thing is happening down in Australia. They even had a mammal go extinct because of the heat. Yesterday, it was 122 degrees in the Congo. And in the past 2 months, Australia and New Zealand had the highest temperatures on record. And so we're going to be seeing that effect up here, only we're seeing the opposite side, the heat coming up through the Arctic and causing these massive cold fronts to come down upon the United States.
Wow. Yeah, it's sure affecting people in lots of different ways, and I think we're all kind of struggling to make sense of it. You know, that's the thing with the science, and a lot of this seems somewhat beyond our comprehension. And I guess it was interesting for me, the other dimension to this is not only is the weather, but when I look through my files on flooding and we look at how we keep having these 100-year floods, a 500-year flood, another 500-year flood, you know, it's not making some kind of sense in a way. And so there's not only is the climate, but we've altered that landscape. You know, we're draining the water off the land quicker, you know, trying to control it more with these reservoirs and levees and all these different attempts at controlling something that, you know, is really beyond our comprehension almost, or for me it is.
Well, it's definitely beyond our comprehension. One thing that I, as you were talking about what's happening this year, I was reminded that during Hurricane Katrina, even people who were climate scientists were saying, we can't attribute this to climate change, but it's what they were what we've been predicting. It's what the models have been predicting. But now, almost everyone is saying, yes, this is climate change. And, of course, we haven't been doing anything about it, and we are reluctantly, we as a society and political entity, starting to talk about what we can do about it. What's your comment on that?
Yes. In November, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, that's the section of the United Nations that puts plans, procedures out for climate change. For once, they've actually set a goal. And the goal is the year 2030. If the world does not reduce its carbon footprint, the amount of carbon we've put into the air, by 50%, we're going to have catastrophic human and weather issues that will make this flood look like it was absolutely nothing.
Wow.
And unfortunately, we're already seeing that. We're seeing this right now before 2030's even started.
Well, we need to, at least we're seeing it enough that we're waking up and we're beginning to talk about things like carbon sequestration because I'm sure you know all the anything I might say. So I think I'd better just turn it back over to you.
Well, you know, this time frame, I think, is what's really rising on the horizon really fast is how many years, how much time do we have to start addressing this? And so, as Susan mentioned, we're talking about carbon sequestering and, you know, with the farmland in Iowa, the way it is and stuff, you know, that's something we really need to look at. And we're kind of talking about that with cover crops and things like that. But, you know, that's a long-range plan. So, you know, where do we go from here? How do we get in here and do something?
It's actually very simple and very complex at the same time. We should have been started doing things over 15 years ago. But there's a little thing called politics.
Yes.
And when you have countries, which we call them climate-denying countries, that refuse to accept the fact that climate change is here and that we are negatively impacting our entire environment, in favor of the coal industries, we're not going to get anything done. And the top polluters in the world are China, Russia, the United States, Australia, and parts of Poland.
Parts of now Poland?
Parts of Poland, 80% of their power comes from coal.
Right. So,
and they hosted the COP24 UN conference on climate this past March.
Well, in Iowa, you know, we're looking at putting in a lot of wind turbines and going to that kind of renewable thing. We're talking about how fast that has to happen, how it happens and all that. But there's, you know, that, again, is also kind of a little bit longer range thing. And we're talking about even if we put in all the wind turbines, our coal plants are still continuing to run. So it's and that, you know, that gives some confusion to this conversation, too, if we're trying to keep that carbon out of the air and we're just providing more energy all the time and yet keeping those coal plants running.
That's because the fossil fuel industries had a stranglehold, literally, on Washington, D.C. for decades and decades. From 2006 to 2016, the fossil fuel industries lobbyists sank $2.6 billion into giving money to congressmen and senators to ensure that there were no regulations, no laws passed that would affect the fossil fuel industries, and at the same time give them hundreds of millions of dollars of subsidies to keep them going. Coal is a dying industry, quite literally, but for matters of profit, they're going to do everything they can to keep themselves open. And with this current administration, it's become even worse.
Well, you know, it gets to the, for me on a personal level of, you know, at some point we're going to have to talk about the energy that we use because we just keep producing more and more energy. It doesn't matter the form. So now we're hearing discussion of nuclear energy, you know, those kinds of things. But making that transition to those renewables is going to take some time, and it also produces some carbon footprint. So, you know, somehow we've got to get this focused, and I think that new Green Deal that people are talking about, I don't really understand all the details, but it's kind of that conversation of how do we have a social movement? How do we socially agree that we have to make some drastic changes here and very quickly, which is what you're saying, I believe.
Right. And it's happened. It's happening globally. It's happening in the United States. It's happening with children, with young students. It's called the Friday Off movement.
Yeah.
Every you've heard about it.
Yeah, we had a pretty active one here, especially with the high school students. It was interesting. The high school students had there's a few days early because they weren't going to be in school on Friday anyway, so they had it was a huge picture in the Ames Tribune, and then the college students did something on Friday, and it was not quite so big.
But yeah, it's growing. People are.
It is growing exponentially.
Right, and leading by the young people, I think, is really critical because they're at an age of looking to their future, and the rest of us are kind of maybe how do we hang on?
pretty much.
No, it's really it is very important that they are aware of this and knowing because it's absolutely true. The older people talk about worrying about their grandchildren or what's going to happen to our grandchildren, but they're going to have to face it themselves in their pretty soon in their lifetimes.
Yeah.
That's absolutely correct. And the tragic part is that my generation, I'm turning 70 here shortly, our generation did this. Because we had a different dynamic, economic dynamic of mass consumerism. More is better. And we found out that more might be better in the short term, but in the long run, we've been killing off our planet. And so it's going to cause we're going to have an absolute major global paradigm shift in not only how we think, how we do things, how we produce energy, but also in how we eat. Believe it or not, in Iowa, you know, we have a large pork industry and a large beef industry. Cows and beef and pork give off the second most amount of pollutants into the air than anything else, including cars. Most people don't know that.
And that actually is something that's very, very hard for people to grasp. And so, of course, they're coming after you, your cars. The Green New Deal is going to tell you, I mean, your pigs, your beef, your steaks, your meat. Yeah. You can't eat. Actually, I'm a little worried about those cows that make cheese, too, because.
Well, John, there's, you know, another part. I was just reading this thing. It caught my attention. It said that, you know, we've switched to LED lights, say, because they're so energy conserving. But we actually ended up putting in more lights because of that than we got from switching to the LED. And I know over time that won't be true. But initially, you know, I know people have been doing remodeling and, you know, they're putting in a lot more lights in their house. And thinking, you know, they're saving by putting in the LED. It's kind of ironic that as we get to this discussion of how are we going to, you know, get back to what we basically need instead of our desires some way. So
right. I mean, everybody doesn't need a TV in every room. They don't need a car for the wife, a car for the husband, a car for the kids. They don't need those. They don't need six computers in their house.
Right.
We consume far, far too much energy.
You're listening to KHOI Community Radio. Your hosts for today are Susan Franzen and Mark Edwards, who is speaking with John Davis, climate activist, about how he views his own personal experience of being flooded out from his home in Hamburg to climate change. Well, we could go on that for quite a while, but just a minute, though, because you are collecting the stuff that was in your house, a lot of it that you can't take with you. You, according to Ed Fallon, you are a climate refugee since you have to leave Hamburg and go. Where are you going to go?
I'm going to be going to Council Bluffs, some places not in the floodplain.
Okay.
I've lost all of my paper, research papers, private papers, reports that I've had over 20 years. All I can say is thank God when I went to the Philippines, I took my computer with me, and I have a 2 terabyte external disk, which is nothing but climate data. I have probably one of the largest private collections of climate data of anyone you can think of. And I update that every single day.
Well, wow, John, our heart goes out to you because here's a person, you know, like yourself that's been following this and into the weeds, into the details, and then to have it personally affect you like that on that level is just ironic that we're all going to be in that situation maybe the way things are going. So
pretty soon, I was reading a report 2 weeks ago about how the weather is radically changing around the world and the way the temperatures are heating up. If we don't do anything, this is before 2030, about 2025, the area between Omaha and Des Moines, its normal temperatures would be up the same as Las Cruces, New Mexico.
Yeah, just trying to put this all together. It's just, you know, we're just bombarded again with all these things. And then to have on this personal level of the news with the flooding and everything. And now we're talking flooding in the Mississippi River. And, you know, it just goes on and on. So hopefully this will raise some awareness and help us pull together on this, because that's the only way we're going to be able to address this.
And I hope so. And what everyone needs to do is keep pinging on their legislators. Keep pinging on their mayors, their state legislatures, our congressmen, our governor, and start saying, hey, we're going to start voting, and we're going to vote for people who's going to be helping us, who are going to be pro-climate. And if you're not, we're going to vote you out. And 2020 is going to be a very crucial year for that.
Crucial, and we're not sure at all what's going to happen, but I was going to be hearing about it first.
Yeah,
we will hear about it first. Governor Inslee is going to be coming down here on April 12th to Southwest Iowa to take a look at the damage, and he's a presidential candidate and also a very pro-climate candidate. That's his number one topic. So we need more candidates that understand what climate is, and we need to educate our current legislatures about what climate is doing, and we have some great organizations in Des Moines that do that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And we do have another topic for this morning, so we will be as soon as you hang up, we have another phone call to make. So I will say goodbye. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, John.
Yeah, thank you, John.
Thank you. Stay dry.
Thanks.
All right.
That was John Davis, who is a climate refugee. So he talked to us not only about his own personal flood out, but about the work that he has been doing since Al Gore. So over 20 years, he has been he's been collecting climate data. He's been visiting places all over the world and has been recognized and honored for that. And so he comes home to face it right in his own basement.
Yeah, and have it hit you like that. That's bringing your work home with you, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. I have with me my co-host today is Mark Edwards, who spent many years working in the ledges. And so the last part of our show, I will just turn over to you, Mark, because you are representing Friends of Ledges, and you also have a guest.
Well, I'm excited. I've lived by that park for 40-something years, so I'm pretty tied to the park. And so they've done a documentary, and they're going to be showing it at the local Boone Theater for a few days, and I'll give you the details in a minute. But we're lucky today to have the park manager today, Andy Bartlett, here. And he's been working really closely in the Friends group at Ledges, which makes that a unique park for having that support of those friends. And I'm going to have Andy kind of step up here and just give us a little bit of background about the documentary that was made about the Ledges and a little bit about the Friends group, if you wouldn't mind there, Andy.
Sure. Yeah. Well, thanks, Mark, and everybody for having me on today. But you know, just to kind of talk about what Mark has mentioned, what a unique opportunity we had 2 years ago when our local chamber of commerce director approached me and said, "Hey, we've got this guy that lives in Boone, and his grandpa was Carl Fritz Henning, who was our first park custodian at Ledges, and we have an opportunity now to preserve what he knows and his experiences at Ledges growing up as a young boy with his grandpa." In the infancy of Ledges and the infancy of our state park system as a whole. And I said, yeah, let's do it. And our friends group, this volunteer 501c3 friends group, jumped right on board as a fiscal sponsor. And we started rolling with interviews and collecting footage and articles and pictures to put into this documentary. And it just snowballed from there. So it took 2 years basically to put a lot of us together to do a lot of research and get to contact the right people to be in the documentary, but we finally got it to a final stage where we've got hard copies on DVD and we're ready to show it on the big screen at the Boone Theater the middle of April.
Yeah, well, it was exciting. I was in the grocery store the other day, and there was the table with the friends group sitting there with a big display. And I guess they've been all over town at different places. And that's so – I mean, to have that community support is just wonderful for that park because that's what made it a park. That's why it was picked as a park, because of the community.
Exactly, exactly. You know, the community of Boone did a tremendous part almost 100 years ago in establishing it as a park. They raised over $16,000 as a community to help – supplement the state funds to purchase the original parkland that we had. And it wasn't just the Boone community either. It was Ames, and it was Perry, and it was Ogden, and it was Madrid that all kind of bonded together at the time to preserve this incredible landscape, this unique place that we have in the Ledges. And even today, we see that support from some of the local businesses around town that allow our friends group to come in and have a booth space to sell some of those DVDs and some of their merchandise to generate money that all goes right back into the park anyways.
Yeah, it's really been phenomenal to see how fast that support came together and what they've accomplished. I mean, they were doing the recycling. They've done all kinds of different things within the park, you know, hand labor, planting trees. And
yep.
with the budget cuts, you know, to natural resources and things, that's just been a wonderful thing because we just
yeah.
desperately need that support. You know, a little bit more back about the history, you know, Ledges was one of the first original parks. It came on a little later than Backbone, which was the first. But it's a unique park because of its biological base, its location on the Des Moines River, which drains two-thirds of Iowa, goes right through that park. And it had 500,000 people a year coming there when I first started coming there. And now I think the numbers are about 400,000. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's a, you know, estimation on day-use visitors is really hard because we don't have car counters and all that. So we base it off of environmental things like flooding and how open we are, access to the park. We base it on camping numbers, excuse me, and some other things. But, yeah, I would say it's probably not near what it was in the past, but it's still 300,000, 400,000 annually is a lot of visitors.
Yes, it is, especially, well, what is that, about 1,100 acres now? Is that with the
yep.
addition, 1,100 acres? And so
almost right at 1,100 acres.
Yeah, that's, and, you know, I guess for me, that park has always been special because it's not like a lot of the other state parks. There's no artificial lake. You know, it's not recreational except for hiking. It's, you know, it's actual natural beauty is what makes it so unique. And especially in the middle of central Iowa, you know, that deep 100-foot cut and those beautiful ledges and the geology and the birds that are there, it's really a unique place. And I really think a lot of the public does not realize how unique that spot is. It's in the whole state. It's a gem.
it really is. You know, it boasts on a small scale a lot of the broad themes of Iowa as far as landform regions and water and ecology and microclimates and plant vegetative communities. It really represents a lot of that. And it's got ties back to history that not every state park can claim, such as, you know, being a part of the state parks movement as a whole and having some of those influential figures have direct impact on Ledges that were the fathers of state parks at the time in the early 1900s.
That's right. And, you know, I find that really exciting because when I look back in the history, we realize that Iowa, you know, was setting a national precedent with the state parks and actually led the nation in 1937. And now today, here we are kind of competing for the bottom. And so, you know, how do we relate to our resources, you know, and there's less and less opportunities, I think, for people to get outside into that natural beauty. We're spending more time on the electronics and inside our homes and that kind of thing. And so, you know, that's going to make that area even more of something to take care of, I think. And so that's what the Friends Group has really illustrated. They've seen that and trying to figure out how to do that. That's just wonderful.
Yep. Projects like this with the documentary just help to connect people to what we have there and promote what it is and what its meaning is.
Uh-huh. Well, it's kind of nice, you know, that Boone even has a theater, and yet to be able to show this in the movie theater there and see the community come together to come to that theater will be good for the town, too. And I think that's just extra special. And I'm hoping
we
set a precedent for other places to see what could be done. So,
yeah, definitely. So you'll have to come out, anybody listening. There'll be commemorative tickets that will be there on hand, you know, kind of keepsake mementos of the actual showing that the theater's produced. We've got some posters that I'm working on getting distributed around town and things right now that help promote the film. But there'll be four different showings, April 13th through the 15th. And hopefully we pack the theaters enough so that there's a demand that we'll have to schedule some more showings after that. But we've got to also work with the theater and what other shows they're showing at the time. And the pictures that own those shows have to allow us permission. So it's we're lucky to get it in now, and we'll take the opportunity when we have it.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, and we'll get that out, the information, and you'll be able to buy that documentary through the Friends Group or at the theater. Is that correct, Dan?
Yeah, at the theater, after each showing, the Friends Group will have a representative there at a table in the lobby of the theater selling them for $10 a copy.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
We caught him at the last minute, even.
Yes,
so thank you, Andy.
Thank you, Andy.
Yep.
And Before we close the show, we'd like to let you know about a musical opening at the Ankeny Community Theater. Our thanks to the directors for bringing us the news. I'm speaking with Carissa Hamill, who is the director of Kiss Me, Kate for the Ankeny Community Theater. And have you directed before?
I have. This is my second show at Ankeny Community Theater in the directing role. The first one I did for them was 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, which I did a year and a half ago. But I've done other productions, mostly out in California.
Have you ever seen Kiss Me, Kate?
Yes, I've actually been in the show a couple of times. So it's one of my favorites. And so when they were looking for a director, they asked me, and I'm like, well, of course, it's a classic. I love this one.
Have you ever played the lead?
No, I have not. I am on the younger side, and Lily tends to be an older role. Oh. So before now, the last time I did Kiss Me, Kate was when I was a teenager.
Oh, so you've grown up to be a director.
Yes, I have, actually, yeah.
So what do you think is special about your production of this show?
I believe it's actually the space. Ankeny Community Theater is such a wonderful, small, intimate theater that there's no place to hide when you're on stage. You literally have to put everything out there for the audience to enjoy, and that's what really makes it special. At points, the actors are sometimes only a foot away from the audience, and so it creates a completely different feel for the show.
An intimate feel.
Yes, very much so.
What are you finding about your cast interactions? Are there anything special about that?
We have a really amazing ensemble that ranges all the way from 15 up to their mid-50s. And we even, I believe, have somebody possibly in their 60s. I can't remember. I never really cast based off of age. But they're all putting in such tremendous work and effort, and we make it work for everybody so that they all look amazing.
Are you have any feelings about the change in perceptions about women since this play was
the show is based in the 1940s, and there is a huge difference between how women and their sexuality were perceived then versus how we see them now. So it's been very interesting kind of walking that line of being truthful to the time period while still updating it. The audiences nowadays aren't offended. There's a really fun character where he talks about this woman that he loves in like a weird sort of way that if she doesn't behave, he's going to spank her. And I'm like, well, I don't particularly enjoy this line, but the way we're going to make this work is that everybody else around him starts making fun of him for saying stuff like that.
Oh, that should be interesting.
Right, exactly. So it's kind of staying true to the 1940s slang while still making it seem real and updated for the current audience.
So what is your favorite thing about directing this show?
Oh, the music. Cole Porter's music it's beautiful. It's transcendent. It fits everything so perfectly, and the orchestrations that were provided for us are just really, really amazing. They fully flesh out his music.
Also, of course, he does have a lot of humor. I'm thinking about Too Darn Hot.
Oh, yes. Too Darn Hot is hilarious, and that is definitely shown on stage as well. We've fully embraced the comedy of that piece in the choreography provided by Denise Bollinger. She's done some really amazing stuff with that piece.
What are your dates on the show?
Yeah, definitely. We open on Friday, so just in a couple of days, and we run through the 14th of April.
And you have a Friday, Saturday, Sunday matinee both weekends, or is there something else?
Yeah, this weekend is Friday, Saturday. Showtime starts at 7:30, and then Sunday is a 2 p.m. matinee. And then the second weekend, it's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30, and then the Sunday 2 p.m. matinee.
So they're quite a few chances to get it, but you need to get your tickets early, I presume. How? What's the size of the theater? You said it's intimate. How many?
Yeah, the house total is either 85 or 86 seats, and actually the first Sunday performance is already sold out. So if you're wanting to go to a matinee and you want to get to that second weekend Sunday, make sure you go online to AnconyCommunityTheater.com and grab those tickets fast.
Well, we'll have the link to your website up as soon as we can, but maybe people who are really eager should listen for it. Repeat it, please.
Yes, www.AnconyCommunityTheater.com. Or if you're on Facebook, you can look up Ankeny Community Theater, and there is an event link page that will take you directly to the website.
So, good luck to you, and good luck to anybody who wants to catch your performance.
Yes, thank you very much. I hope you all come out and see us.
Okay. Thanks, Carissa. Bye.
From this moment on, you and I, babe, will be right.
From this moment on. This is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today are Susan Franzen and Mark Edwards. We spoke with Shelby Brewer and students from the Nevada Boys and Girls Club. We also spoke with John Davis and Carissa Hamill. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's stories. Local Talk was engineered by Aladdin Al-Kathari. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Catherine Grayson singing From This Moment On from the original cast recording of Kiss Me, Kate.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-2391-2878, or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you call to decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button and Community Radio, please support.
Okay. If you've enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you on the radio.